Clubhouse.
There is a lot of content in the world. Each year, we're inundated with thousands of hours of television, hundreds of new movies, and music every week. It can be overwhelming. How do you know what's worth your time and what you should just skip? Well, luckily, Pod Clubhouse is here to help.
This is Caroline.
And this is Mike. Tonight, we're talking about Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness. Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness is a new HBO Max original series. It's a four-part docu-series. Originally, it was picked up by CNN. It was actually going to be one of their like highlights of their March upfronts, but for some reason, it got moved over to HBO Max. Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness will debut on August 27th on HBO Max. Hey, Caroline, what'd you think of this?
Overall, I thought that it was a fun journey with the Patel fam. I felt like there was a lot of good questions that they were asking. And, you know, it felt pretty universal to like everyone's pursuit of happiness.
There's a lot that he's talking about in this series that is universally applicable to everyone. He's asking questions that I think especially people our age are asking, or at least three of the four episodes, I think are very applicable to people with parents, to people with kids, to people with jobs. Those are very personal issues. The fourth episode was more of a social issue, an ongoing discussion on social issues, but all timely and all, I think, kind of evergreen relevant.
So let's talk about Ravi Patel, who he is and what he brought to the table.
I know Ravi Patel. I know he's an actor. I know he had a show, Meet the Patels, from a couple of years ago, which I think his family was heavily involved in. His family, who we get to meet actually in one of the episodes. Tonight, we meet the parents. We spend an entire episode with them. And they're a rip. I really enjoyed them. What was your take on his overall persona?
My first impression of him was he was such a happy, smiley guy. Is there a version of photogenic when it comes to TV?
Yeah, I think so.
He's like a face magnet for me because he was just so right in the camera. Like he would just look directly into my soul, like through the camera, be like smiley and just had a lot of energy. So in that regard, I thought he was a great host.
Yeah, he's definitely watchable. If you're going to go along and have some of the serious conversations that they have and talk about the issues in a serious way, having a funny guy who seemingly doesn't take too many things in life serious, his starting outlook seems to be very jokey, very smiley. That it makes it all much more palatable. I found sometimes maybe it was a little too much for the joke given the topic at hand.
Right. I mean, that was just his personality, but I appreciated that he had to be very vulnerable in the majority of the show, because he is not only tackling tough questions that, you know, he kind of had to bare his soul, but he was also bringing on his actual family. So there was like a whole other element of it being extremely personal. You know, when we talk on podcasts, a lot of times we talk about our kids, we talk about our life stories, we talk about memories we've had or things happened in school with us or stuff like that. But this was like on camera, you know, he was having to deal with like all of that right in front of us.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really an interesting thing, not only to bring your parents on and feature them so heavily, but his wife plays prominently throughout the series, but is along for him on one of the four journeys. He talks about his daughter. There's a lot of footage. You really are brought into his family in a way that you don't see a lot of celebrities broadcasting their family. But I think to do the show that he set out to do here for CNN originally, I think you have to. I think if you're not vulnerable like that, you're not going to bring the audience with you or engage with them in the way I think was the point of this show. Let me ask you, what was the point of this show?
That's a good question, and something that in my pro-con columns, I would put a smack in the middle, because I felt like while, yes, these questions were universal, I didn't ever really get that moment where I felt like he looked into the camera and gave us the premise. Like he didn't say, I'm in search of XYZ and here's why and here's what prompted this. Here's my motivation. Like I get it. I get that these topics come up. But at the same time, I didn't feel like it was something that mass audiences are not going to be like, why is he doing this? What's happening? What'd you think? Was it clear?
If you watch the entire episode, if you read the synopsis of what the episode was about before you started, I think you had an idea just by understanding what they were talking about. I think you could identify with it. And again, he's talking about universal things here. What happens when your parents get old and they need to retire? How do you approach parenting? Do we work too much in this country? Is it killing us? The fourth one was a question about immigration and does unfettered immigration hurt or help a country? Especially, again, those three issues, I think those are all questions that we all ask at some point in our life. So from that point of view, yeah, I understood what was going on, but same as you, I was looking for, every episode starts with him talking, right, about the topic, but in a kind of a really personal way, almost like in media res, like he's having the conversation when the cameras start to roll. There's no credit sequence or some kind of voiceover that says, Ravi Patel started out, you know, he wanted to explore certain life questions. And in his approach of talking about them, decided to look at a very specific case study and went all over the world to study a specific example of the topic we're talking about. There's no thesis statement to the show. I guess that's what I'm looking for. There's no thesis statement.
I like that you said it that way, because that's exactly what I was getting at. Like, there was no moment when he just looked in the camera and was like, hey, here's the intro proper, you know, and I would have been fine with that coming through a title sequence. You know, there's plenty of shows who do that. They're like, there's a mom, there's a dad, right, and like explain the setup. I needed something to explain the setup a little bit. I could enjoy the episodes for what they were, but I felt like I would have gotten more out of them if I had that setup. I do think that Ravi's actual words were very helpful. I'm going to just read them to you. He said, I'm obsessed with trying new things and getting better. I love fun and I love love. Hence the premise of the show. Each episode truly was a life-changing journey. I learned so much about myself, laughed with some of the most inspiring people in my life, and gained 15 pounds. With the world in such a crazy place right now, maybe this show is what some of us need. If anything, for a laugh or two. I totally get that. And I do feel like it was a little bit like when you said that they shared footage, this seemed like an extension of footage on an adult level. So it was like, we weren't given much setup about those family like reels that they ran. You know, it's like, I don't know, is this a birthday party? Are we at grandma's thing? Like, we didn't really know, but they would just show us these little clips. And a little bit, this entire docuseries was like an adult version of like, here's a trip I took and here's the footage. Take what you want from it. Take how it applies to you. I'm going to give you some of my own. You're going to see my reactions. And then you kind of figure out what you think about this.
You're on to something there. For example, there's a lot of footage with Ravi when he was a kid, because it comes up a lot in different ways about his parents being immigrants to this country. And so Ravi being very young, coming to America. And so there's a lot of footage of him, you know, the old grainy camcorder footage that, you know, our parents may have, or even more like the old movie film that you would have to get like a big 8mm projector camera to kind of screen. There's a lot of that kind of footage, but it's not like you would see in a normal documentary where there's then some kind of lower thirds that come on and say, you know, Ravi, age 4. You have to kind of immerse yourself in the episode and just kind of absorb it like you were sitting in his couch. So one of my takeaways was, this was a very personal experience for him. He decided, I have these life questions. I am at a point in my life that I have these life questions. I want to talk about them. I want to explore them. So I am going to go to specific places, explore the question at large through a very specific experience that someone in the world has with the question. And if it is helpful to you at home to spark the conversation for yourself, then great. But I'm doing this for myself.
Okay. I appreciate that very much. I do think that there was that element of self-discovery and we were along for the ride. I completely appreciated that. The majority of audiences during, you know, this weird COVID time might appreciate this sort of nostalgic nature of looking back at home videos and that type of thing. But at the same time, there were parts that, you know, it might not bump for some people. You know, they might be like, huh, that's just not the way I ever thought about it. And so this episode just like doesn't exactly hit for me. Let's talk about a couple of the other characters that they brought along for this ride, because it wasn't just Ravi the whole time. So in the first episode, like you mentioned, the topic was growing old in Mexico, which again seems so utterly specific. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't just this concept of retirement. It was specifically retiring in one town in Mexico and exactly what that would look like. He brought along, of course, his parents, because this was his own personal journey about how this was going to work. What do you think about the parents? Did they bring something to the show? Like, as characters, did you feel like this was a good choice?
They are clearly very accustomed to Ravi, to his antics, to his personality. You can see in each of his parents where a lot of his personality, which, like him or not, I don't think you can deny Ravi Patel wears his personality on his sleeve. I don't think he's got a lot that he's keeping under the surface. And that's not in a bad way. It's a very vulnerable kind of way. And in a way, a lot of actors can be very vulnerable. Like, what you see is what you get with them. I think very much that's how he is. And his parents seem to be very much that way. They're a trip. I love them. They're exactly the kind of parents that you wish you had. They're little tiny Indian people, and you just want to scoop them up and hug them and have them cook you delicious food, or at least the mom. Like, they're a rip. They were a joy.
I love that you said that, but it's funny that you said at least the mom, because I was going to be like, at least the dad.
Like, I don't know the dad cooks.
Oh, the dad was so adorable, though. Like, when he was like, I have a bucket list, and it's to smoke pot, but don't tell your mom.
Right. And of course, Robbie was like, this is like my dream come true. I'm going to smoke a bowl with my dad without my mom knowing, and we're going to go play golf.
It was so funny and so endearing. That was the intro episode. Now, I'm curious about the idea of sort of having this like life journey conversation and starting at a retirement question. And I know it was retirement for his parents, but that seemed kind of like older than most people. You know, like, I felt like it maybe would have made sense to start with episode 3 and talking about working, because most of us started jobs at 16, 17, 18 years old. So I feel like a younger group could maybe appreciate that well before you could appreciate the retirement of parents.
Yes, that's interesting. And on its face, I think that's right. It is a weird starting point. But unlike any of the other episodes that come in as docuseries, this one is called Growing Old in Mexico, and it deals with his parents and Merida, Mexico, which is just this expat cove for people who have just, you know, Americans especially, who have, because it's so much cheaper, it's literally half the cost of retiring in the United States.
You guys, they said $26,000 and you could like live the life.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was kind of like the Playboy Mansion for old people, right? I mean, you had all these men and women just kind of living commune style in like a giant apartment. Like, it was like Melrose Place gone old.
Well, but here's
they all fuck, clearly. I mean, Whoa. They're all drinking and fucking. That's okay, basically how they spend their
time. Here is one thing, though, that I do want to mention about it. Yes, it was retirement, but it was like retirement the first 10 years. Like, so you retire at 65 or 70 or something like that. Maybe this lifestyle is good for you to like 75, 80 at best. But like, true rest of your life care, this situation would have been terrible. Like, you're not party hardy, you know? Like,
right.
I mean, this wasn't like a support situation. So it was interesting because, again, it was just this really, really specific window of life that I felt like it was really interesting. It was something I didn't know anything about, and a very specific journey.
As I always do, I went on a tangent. But my original point was the episode was called Growing Old in Mexico. But I think what the episode was really about, and I think it's why it's the first one, is all of the show was from Ravi's point of view. This is a selfish show insofar as it's his questions. It's his exploration of these life questions. And I don't think he was actually concerned about retirement. I think the question he's exploring in the episode, and it comes up constantly, is what am I going to do when I don't have my parents anymore? What do I do when, if my parents move to fucking Mexico? Or really, what do I do when my parents die? And I think that's the question that Ravi is really asking in that episode from his point of view. He's watching his parents enjoy their time and being seduced by this lifestyle. They're both ready to buy in
they
like
signed
day one.
Up.
They signed up. I mean, this was a timeshare presenter's dream.
It looked like they were just gonna have like a pillow fight every night,
yeah.
And happy hour starts at
And he's
noon.
Kind of freaking out, Ravi. He's like, I brought
it looks
you
great.
Yeah. He's like, I don't think my parents are coming home. And that's really the question that he's exploring here. And I think that's why it makes sense is for so many people, when especially if you have a close family, an important question when you turn in your mid-30s, your early 40s, and your parents are correspondingly older is, what does life look like without my parents? That's a really hard question for a lot of people to deal with. And I think that's what Robbie's really wrestling here. His parents' retirement was the stated reason, but the real core of the episode is, personally, what am I going to do when my parents aren't here anymore? Whether it's down the street because they live in LA with me, or they die because you know, that's what happens. You
right. mean, God's plan.
God. Yeah. yeah. So I think that's why it's the first episode. I think it's the first episode because of that very personal question.
So moving on to other people that we have as our sort of like sidekicks, we have in episode 2, we have Mahali, who is Ravi's wife. And I know that you felt like she was an excellent balance to Ravi, especially in the second episode.
Yeah, she appears in, I think, all of the episodes, just about, or most of them, in some form, has her in archival footage. But yes, she goes to Japan with him, and they decide to look at, again, the very specific issue of, how do you parent? Do you parent too much discipline? Do you parent with not enough discipline? And so for the specific example, you know, here, it's let's go to Japan, where it's a lot of overparenting. They're known for their strict discipline, setting the kids out on their own path early. So that's the way they're going to explore the question, because they have a young daughter and they're at a crossroads of, do we be too lenient with her? Or are we too strict with her? And each of Mahali and Ravi sitting on the opposite sides of that equation. So that's an interesting discussion, because parenting choices, and that's something that parents don't often talk about. Even if you talk about whether or not you're having kids before you get married, which you should all talk about whether you're having kids before you get married, a lot of times you don't think about what kind of parent are you going to be. And these two represent, I think, the very yin-yang of the parenting style. So it was interesting. And she is kind of the straight man to... You get the impression he's a real long day a lot of times.
I would not exactly say that, but I would say that he's on pretty much all the time. Right. And so I could definitely see where there'd be times when you'd be like, okay. And I mean, and I would say that about anybody. Ravi seems like a hilarious person, but there'd be times when you'd be like, simmer.
Right.
Please. So I thought Mahali did a great job, like being his sidekick basically on this. The actual episode in itself, they're so specific in their examples that I mean, I expected this to be a situation where, especially because they were exploring the concept of parenting, I thought we were going to visit like multiple ways to parent. You know, like here's a parent who's like
show
super
us both
intense
sides of the argument.
Yeah, or even the spectrum of the argument, sure. Right? Because there's like all kinds, right? But I was surprised when it was like pretty much we just focused on Japanese parenting and even a specific sect of Japanese parenting.
Right.
It was fascinating. I think that as parents, I feel like both of us were watching it and being like, whoa, like this is stuff I've never thought about. And it did open our eyes, I think, more than the first episode.
Yeah, it was something where I felt like I learned something, and that's something that is applicable to me, because again, I have a son, you know, preteen son, so I'm not really thinking about retirement in Mexico, nor am I particularly close with my parents, so I'm not considering their mortality either, but I am definitely considering how I parent and how I approach discipline, especially as my son continues to grow and begins to, you know, catch up to me, where it's, you know, harder to catch him and hold him down and beat him if I need to be.
Shut up.
You know, so it was fascinating, and to learn about a very specific culture. So I appreciate the show from that. And again, it's, you know, you and I had a conversation about parenting that resulted from this episode. So maybe that's the point of it. And maybe the episode worked from that point of view. There's a scene where these parents set their kids out, their son out on an errand when he's, what, 6 years old?
He's 6. And what was really fascinating about it is how they actually tagged him with like a lanyard that represented the fact that this was his first errand.
Right.
And it let like the entire community know, like, hey, this kid's out. We know he's out. He's doing an adult errand. And this is like with permission. The whole thing...
It was respected.
It's so not Western culture and like what people do today that it was absolutely mind-blowing that everyone else would respect it too. In this day and age, when
that
I feel
was
like...
the thing, was everyone was in on it.
The
lanyard represented like a pass, like a hall pass. Like he had permission to go to the bathroom, and everyone in the school understood what the pass would be, that, oh, okay, you know, little Johnny is allowed to go to the bathroom, except for it's Tokyo. And it's little...
He went to the grocery store to buy dinner.
Little boy, right, he's shopping for the family dinner. They talk to him, and like, you know, you have to get stuff for dinner. They give him a little list. He's like, I understand, Mom, in his little boy voice. It was adorable. And they sit out. And Ravi and his wife, you know, they have a very American response. They stalk him. They follow him the entire way. They actually end up interfering with him because they are just so freaked out by the idea. So it was really eye-opening for that point of view, because I'm not sure I would have a very different reaction to them. Like, you know, You and I, I'm sure, grew up in a generation where we were able to free roam during the day. A lot of times our parents had no idea where it was because you could go explore your neighborhood. You know, I grew up in Queens, New York, which is not a place I would ever let Tom roam the streets of today. But I did.
And certainly not at six with a sign around his neck saying, "I'm alone."
Right. But when I think back to my childhood, though, like maybe not at six, but as soon as I became really good on my bike, I was gone. I was all over the county of Queens. And my parents had no idea where I was. And you could do that in relative safety. But that's just not the world I feel like we live in now. So it was really eye-opening that that's a thing that happens and it's an accepted part of their culture. From that point of view, I loved it. I loved learning about that. But did you feel like we got any closer to how Ravi and Mahale are going to parent their daughter at the end of the episode?
I really don't. And not only that, but I don't think that – I thought it was such an extreme example mm-hmm. that I don't know that it will affect the majority of parents watching it. They would be like, wow, that's really outside the box.
Right.
So anyway, let's keep doing what we're doing. You know, like I'm not sure that it really gave enough. Although I have to say, when you said that like all of the community's in on it, it did make me wonder like, is there room for change? Like, is there room? Like, could you have it on like a small scale? Like, could you let your neighbors know? Like, hey, Johnny's going on this like first whatever errand just down to the end of the block. I'm aware he's out of the right. house. Don't call the police. Right. I was like, would people respect that or not? What do you think? Because I'm not sure.
I think you're talking a very small community, close-knit. Everyone knows each other. Those places, those little pockets that used to exist in large scale in America, I think they've basically evaporated. And I'm sure there are some very small towns where from the day you were born, everyone knows you and you know everyone. And stranger danger is limited because they are flagged from the second a stranger walks into town. But generally, I think that's really become the exception in this country.
I agree.
I don't think they really reached an end to how are we going to parent our kids. But they have this whole conversation about the end that no matter whether you're over strict or not very strict, we all share that we love our kids. And was said with like a real poignancy to it that, yeah, okay, but I don't know. It just didn't seem like a real payoff to me. It was kind of like, really, that's where you got to? Like, I want to know, are you going to start like grounding her every time she pokes you in the eye with something? Or what are you going to do? Like, I didn't feel like we got anywhere. Like,
but here's the key. You're curious, right? But you're curious.
Sure.
So in that way, Ravi
wins. You think it's a backdoor pilot to Ravi's parenting with Mahale?
They already have Meet the Patels. So if you think about that, I think in a lot of ways, maybe, like, this whole time we're going to work out what the concept was. What if the episodes are just meant to pique our interest? To find out what do they choose at the end of the day? Because that would be a real consistent thinker, right? Like, huh, they didn't really tell us exactly what they chose. What are they going to do?
Well, HBO Max, if you're listening, we'll take a producer credit on that show. Have Ravi call us. We could definitely talk to him. We have lots of thoughts.
I like that you said we.
Well, yes.
Okay. Let's move into his third guest. This one started to get outside the fam, but it's still super close friend, Matt Polson.
Who I have heard of Omaze. I'm aware of the organization, but I didn't know Matt.
What is his connection to Omaze?
He was a co-founder of Omaze. And Omaze is they kind of come up with interesting and non-traditional ways of doing fundraising events. I believe that's like their bag, basically. But the interesting thing was that he and Ravi seemed very close with a real shared history, both of them self-appointed workaholics. This episode resonated with me a lot. The episode starts with Ravi talking about that when he's working so many hours, he feels like he's missing all of the firsts, and he lists a bunch of the firsts with, again, family photos and videos of him missing things that his daughter did as a child, first steps, first words, living a parent life through video screens and FaceTime and recordings because you're not actually there. So when he's at work, he's feeling like he's failing his family. And when he's at home, he's feeling like he's failing at work. As a lawyer who has worked many hours and with a long commute, many times in my life, and I try and always be there for my kid. And when I'm there for my kid, I feel like I'm not doing stuff at work that I have expectations to be doing. And when I'm working so many hours at work, I often feel like I am letting my son down. So this episode really actually resonated with me as a 15 plus year attorney who has been on the grindstone. It was kind of depressing, actually, in a lot of ways, the similarities. What did you think of their personality test that they take in the back of the cab where they're almost defending because they're so addicted to their workaholic lifestyle. They're almost defending the are you a workaholic? They're taking like one of those Cosmo tests of are you a workaholic thing. And like they fail the test. I mean, they're clearly workaholics.
Right.
But it was interesting how they were almost, they were defending.
They thought it was, well, they just,
they were kinda, justifying.
Yeah, like normalizing. Right. Like, well, of course we're doing that because I mean, that's like what's expected. You know, I think that this is a real question for all parents who work. I think that this is complicated. And I agree with you that I do think it's universal that there is no one who doesn't feel like their boss isn't on their neck and no one who isn't feeling like, you know, they should have been spending more time with their kiddo. I thought it was interesting where they spent their time on this one.
So they go to South Korea. And they make a point of talking about the rapid growth that South Korea has had in the last couple of generations once the political regime changed and after the Korean War. And Koreans really picked themselves up by the bootstraps and doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down on industry and work ethic, and to an extreme at this point. And kind of how they use Japan as an extreme example of parenting, they use South Korea and its cultural norms, its work cultural norms, as kind of an extreme example of overwork, to the point where there are terms in Korean about death by overwork. There are all these customs where, you know, happy hour is mandatory. It's not even enjoyable. It's mandatory for work promotion, where you're penalized if you're not drinking four times a week.
That's so wild. I did think that this one provided a lot more balance in the conversation because they did offer the explanation of why, you know, they gave everything you just said historically, why the entire country and culture buckled down. And plus that they have this much more like communal thought process that like everyone's working. It's really important you do your part, as opposed to in the West here, we are much more about like fulfilling your own dream.
The individuality versus the community.
The group. Yeah. Making sure that the group's moving forward versus, you know, are you fulfilling your individual dream? That's not as important. I thought they did a really good job, though, because once they explained all those different parts about corporate Korea, basically, which I found it astounding when they said that the government actually placed a cap on work and it's 52 hours a week. That's so much.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, baby steps, right? Because think what it takes for a country to finally acknowledge its populace is working itself literally to death, so much so that you need to step in and rein in. Most governments probably think their citizenry are too lazy, not too hardworking. So think about how bad it must really be in South Korea that they have these work hour caps. And not only that, even during the mandatory happy hour, which Ravi and Matt partake in as pretend employees of this company, and I thought the Korean gentleman they were with gave a really, remember, no women there, though with the ceiling, the glass ceiling is real in South Korea, even still today. But in the happy hour scene, I thought it was really interesting because the all of the Korean men who represented different rungs of the corporate ladder there, they all spoke pretty honestly about how their wives at home, their families at home, they all had kids, they were all married. It was just understood this is part of the job. We have to go drink four times a week. We do more shots per week than the United States and Russia, I believe it was, combined. You know,
it's wild.
That's wild to me. But I thought they were pretty honest about the cost. Like, this is what it is, even with the country changing. And they acknowledge that the country says that it has a problem. They acknowledge that they all work too much, but they all still do it, though, too.
Which is super fascinating when you think about it, because, you know, if your country is doing well and showing up like with honor and work ethic and you have this like amazing productivity, it's kind of wild that the government is willing to slow the roll, because that just seems like the opposite of what the majority of what governments would do. I mean, I feel like in many ways you'd be like, we're proud of our citizenry and like, oh, well, but you're right. Like the suicide rate and the
bridge that they had with the mirrors
and the reminders people.
about their worth as people. Well, you know, as an example of the steps taken to prevent suicide, or the spicy food therapy that people use to relieve the tension. The idea being you basically go on hot ones. You know, the hotter the food that you intake until you cry, it acts as a stress reliever of sorts.
You know what? I wonder if it's stress relief. I know they kind of kept saying those words, but it actually kind of reminded me of when people do things like cutting. You know, like it's like taking something to extreme to feel something,
right?
You know, so that you don't kind of like go dead behind the eyes.
Or
like,
redirect the pain, maybe?
Maybe, yeah, you know? The suffering or the whatever. Like you can't think about it because your lips are literally burning off your face.
You can't, right, where you can't be stressed about work because your eyeballs are sweating, right? That was the example.
That was so funny. Yeah. You're like,
they're not like, crying, they're sweating.
My eyeballs are sweating, like, are you crying? Right. That was super funny. I thought Matt was very engaging. I thought that he was a great partner for Ravi on this journey. And of course, he had his own background and his own story.
Severe.
Yeah.
Significant story.
Yeah, that was great. And I think that viewers are going to really enjoy unwrapping that package when they come to it in the episode. There's a lot there that was really fascinating. But at the same time, you know, this was a difficult episode because it asked a lot of questions about how you're spending your time. And I mean, gosh, I have to say that the ending, you know, portion about going to the death cafe. Wow. I cried.
There's a scene where one of
I asked you if you cried. Do you really did cry?
Yeah, I was lying to you. I was sniffling when you asked me if I was crying. I was literally.
That is so funny because I was watching it and then I totally texted Mike and I was like, did you cry at this part? And he was like, no. And I was like, oh man, because I'm like bawling.
Yeah, no, I was crying because so as one of the stress relievers, there is, you know.
I don't think it's a stress reliever. I think the idea is different. I think it was like if you actually walk through the steps and see what it would be like. It's like a scared straight.
Yes, that's right. I didn't mean stress reliever, right? It's a kind of government program to make you experience what your own funeral would be like, your own death and funeral would be like. You take your, you know, when you go to a funeral and it's a closed casket, so there's a picture of the person, you take that photo. You prepare your own last words, like that would be on your tombstone. You write your own kind of eulogy.
Yeah.
You write your, and then you have to write your final letter. And that's where I finally lost it. So there's a section where you, after you do all these things, then you are actually put in a wooden coffin. It's all lined up in a room.
You're more than that. And I think this is important. You're not put in it. You physically climb in yourself because if you are in a situation where you're considering suicide, you are literally climbing in your own coffin. Right. You didn't die of a dread disease. You know, you didn't get in an accident. You chose to do this. So now you have to step into this and they do this little routine of closing the lid, but then using like a rubber mallet as if they're hammering it shut.
Right.
Oh my God.
And then they kill all the lights. There's no lights inside the coffin. There's no talking. It's just dead silence. Excuse the very poor pun.
You just said kill the lights and dead silence.
Very poor puns on my part. But so afterwards you come out of the coffin and then you write your like goodbye letter to their loved ones. And Robbie's, he goes second and his is more humorous. It's a little less heartfelt. I mean, it's heartfelt for sure, but it's from a comedian's standpoint. It's exactly what you expect Robbie Patel to do as we've come to know him. Matt Poulsen's though had me crying very hard. We learned about his life story. So you already know a little bit of his background, but in his final letter, it really resonated with me. There's lots of his life in there that struck with me. So again, it's a very selfish journey. This series is a very selfish journey. It's a very internal, personal journey. All of these questions, I think, this one for me really hit home and it affected me for sure.
I know for both of us that, you know, there's like a time I feel like in everyone's lives when, especially when it seems like you don't know if you're doing it right with your kids or, you know, you don't know and things just aren't exactly where you thought they'd be. And I think this is extremely relatable. I know for you and I, we both had very low points where we felt like, you know what? I don't think I don't belong here anymore, or I just don't feel like I'm needed here anymore. You know, for my own self, I think as a mom, it comes as more of like, I'm not needed anymore. My kids are older. Nobody needs me. You know, nobody appreciates what I'm doing. And so I think that there's that whole sense there. It was really fascinating to watch the change, you know, specifically in Matt. Now, Ravi was a little bit more jokey. I don't know exactly where he landed. Again, like every other episode, it wasn't fully answered exactly how he felt the change. But for Matt, I mean, he had a huge change. So this was really fascinating. And again, eye-opening to a new culture. I do think they do a really great job of it not being like a National Geographic, like, let's talk about South Korea. Like, this was more like, let's talk to the people on the ground and really do what they do. You know, it sort of felt like being like an exchange student.
Yeah, it was very much like Ravi had been told South Korea has this crazy work culture. You should go there and examine it. And he did, and took along HBO's cameras with him and CNN's cameras with him to document it. It felt very much like that. It was a very personal journey that we just got to come along with. If you read all of the press material for it, there's a lot of personal journey, heartfelt journey, personal journey. And I think that really does come through this whole series. There's nothing here. It's not like Ravi is talking about, he's not talking about what it's like to be a white woman in Idaho in 2020. That's not the question he's trying to answer. He's trying to answer as an Indian American, these experiences as an Indian American actor, father, newborn father, or young daughter, father of a young daughter. These are the questions very much in his wheelhouse that he's trying to answer. And I think from that point of view, it really is a personal journey. I don't think that's any kind of hyperbole.
Not at all. And I mean, that continues into that fourth episode when we have Ravi and his friend. Now, in this one, Mike, I mean,
this was a totally different tone and kind of question than the other three.
Recently, we did another Leoli where some co-hosts discussed the concept of panicerco. And I felt like this one felt a little bit close to that premise in terms of this idea of having different points of view and trying your best to have a civil conversation about it, mostly over food, which was interesting because every time they talked to somebody, it tended to be like, even if they were at like the hot dog cart when they were talking to the politician, or when they went
a truly fascinating guy.
Oh my goodness. He was, wow. I mean, so the topic of this one was immigration and specifically Denmark.
Right. Denmark, which is considered one of the most progressive places on the planet, you know, we're talking all the citizens are cared for, healthcare, true universal healthcare, your income is protected. If you are a citizen in Denmark, the government has a good safety net for you. But has the country as a whole, as a culture, has a very anti-Middle Eastern refugee standpoint. They don't want people from the Middle East there. They don't want Syrians. They don't want brown people the way they're kind of talking about it in the show. It's a very liberal place and also a very conservative place, both on two different on social issues, which you would think would go together because in America they go together. People who are liberal in the government should provide for all of its citizens are also tend to be in America very pro unfettered immigration. Here, it's a very different point of view. Unlike any other episode, I think you're right. I think we got a lot of opposing viewpoints in here. Even Ravi and his friend Abdullah disagreed, which was a really compelling thing to watch, these two friends. And you could tell Abdullah was a little taken aback by Ravi's stance in some of his stances. But there's also this Syrian-born politician who considers himself a Dane, who has lived in the country
for four years.
But he was Syrian born. He is a Syrian and now rails against immigration of refugees of his own ethnic people, biologically related people, if not adopted country related people. It was a really interesting, fascinating conversation. We hear a lot of immigration talk in this country. This was a really unique take on it by putting it somewhere else.
Agreed. And maybe that was important. You know, and that's something I do want to talk about in each of these sections is, you know, the setting that they chose. What did that really like bring to the table? Because they were very specific settings. I mean, Denmark really opened my eyes again to, honestly, the freedom that we have in America. I mean, I was shocked of the concept of a burqa ban. Like, it knocked me back on my heels. I understand completely that not every country has freedom of religion. I really do get that intellectually, but I didn't ever consider the idea of a developed country that I would consider, you know, like you said, kind of, I don't know what the right word is, like
Western democracy style country.
Yeah, that they would go to that type of extreme just seemed wild to me. I was really sincerely shocked by things like that.
Like all the other places, right, you need to go outside the United States because there are a few things in the United States that are really extreme universally. This country is so diverse in its point of view and
that was an important point that they pointed out about that.
Yeah.
Is that they were just now at 8% in their diversity. Like, 92% of the population was like from Denmark. Right. You know, I mean, that's wild.
Right. So, but yeah, so these conversations, all of them, and not only the social one, but the other three conversations would be really hard to examine in America because America as a country doesn't really have a lot of extreme viewpoints that most of the country hews to. South Korea has as a country culture, has a work problem. Japan has, as a culture, extreme parenting culture. I don't know about Mexico as a whole, but this one's very specific place in Mexico is very much into the swinging oldies, you know, lifestyle.
Yeah, right.
But again, not hard to find that in America. And also, this country is so polarized right now. It's very hard to have balanced conversations in the United States these days.
Especially a civilized conversation. I mean, every single thing that I see, the photographs of whomever's speaking, their like throat muscles are strained. Their face looks like their eyeballs are going to pop out of their head. Like no one can just say, this is what I think. And the concept of tolerance is tolerance provided you believe what I believe.
Right, right. Exactly. And both sides of the aisle, honestly.
So hard to handle. I'm like, oh my gosh, there can never be differing opinions. I have such like a different take on people. I am friends with people from all walks of life with all differing backgrounds. And like my only criteria to be your friend is that we have fun and we enjoy our time together. And what you do in your free time and away from me, I don't judge you like at all. I don't, you do you. And so it was really interesting to see these different infiltration of the government and actual control. I was really wowed. But I want to ask you, Mike, like going through each of the episodes, tell me like a highlight moment. So like starting in episode one, like whether it be funny or whether it be poignant, like what was like a boom moment for you?
So there's a part in the episode where while they're going to be in Mexico, it's his mother Champa's 65th birthday. And his father, who you get the impression hasn't probably done a lot of party planning over the course of their life, just because of his personality. He doesn't seem like the kind of person who's thinking about those things. He's so enthralled by this place that he is in now with his son that he organizes with all of these people that they don't know, that they've only known for 24, 48 hours. This amazing, like, well-turned-out birthday party with more people than has ever turned out for any birthday party I've ever had. it didn't really matter that they didn't know them. They all embraced them so honestly and sincerely. It was really heartwarming to see. And their mother and Champa was touched. She was visibly touched by the outpouring of love. I really, really enjoyed that.
I love that too. My favorite part of that one was the Bollywood, like West Side Story dance off that they did on the beach. That
adorable.
Each led by like the parent. I thought that was amazing.
The mother, who was very Bollywood experienced. I mean, she was at all. But the dad was holding. He was a real surprise. He was holding down his Bollywood like a boss.
Yeah. No, they really knew their moves. Yeah. What about in episode two? What was something? Whether you know, again, happy, sad, questioning. Like, what did you think? What was a moment?
I obviously, the kid with the Aaron card was really interesting, but there's a part where Ravi and Mahale go to dinner with parents of young children, and the parents are telling them how they almost feel kind of guilty about it, that parents taking date night is frowned upon. It is not just something you don't get to squeeze in because your lives are busy. You're almost like a mark put upon you if you were to take time to have a mom and dad date nights without your kids to get a sitter. Like it's like a four-letter word to get a babysitter, the way they were telling it. That's kind of crazy. And again, not something you can have in America. Like the idea of mom and dad having a date night, I think, is pretty universally accepted in this country. The idea of getting a sitter doesn't make you a bad parent here.
No.
So it's an extreme, again, another very, very specific and extreme end of the conversation aspect through the date night. You shouldn't feel guilty because you're going out on a date with your spouse.
I think for me, again, it was going back to that concept that like the entire society was cool with how parenting was being done. Because whether or not, you know, the person that was encountering this little six-year-old agreed or didn't agree with this style of parenting, it seemed like they weren't going to judge and they weren't going to call the police and they weren't going to intervene and they weren't going to do anything. You know, it seemed like they actually gave you space, you know, to just like do your thing.
It was an accepted part.
Fascinating.
It was not only understood, but it was almost an accepted part of the parenting experience.
Yeah.
That you know, the kid's six. It's time for him to go get the dinner, go buy all the groceries for dinner that night. It's just, it's the rite of passage.
Or there was that other section too, in that same vein of like the kids being 5 and 7 and traveling for like 3 or 4 hours alone, you know, like on mass transit. Yeah. 5 and 7 seem terribly young to me.
I mean, I took public transportation in New York when I was in high school and in middle school. So starting when I was 12 or 13. And I remember definitely thinking this is not something I should be doing. And I was a big kid, but there's a great story. I remember being on the bus. I was getting off right outside my junior high school, and a guy who had been coughing the entire time gets up and is like, "Sorry, everyone, I got tuberculosis," and gets off the bus. Like, what the fuck am I doing on this bus? I am 13 years old. Are you insane?
Oh my God.
But yeah, so 6 or 7, 5, 7, 6, 7 year old, that's insane to me.
Well, and not like
but
that.
But it's different.
I don't even think that in America, I don't think anyone would leave those kids alone.
No.
I mean, whether they be good hearted or bad,
they would interfere.
They would interfere. Yeah. No one would fucking let those kids run their show.
Right.
You know, someone would be like, "Are you supposed to be here? Where's your mom? Let's call someone. Let's get security." Blah, blah. Like, no one would ever leave them alone. So fascinating with
that. It almost feels like a John Quinones, like, "What would you do?" kind of video. Like, the kids were like actors.
Yes.
Like, no one would come and talk to little Bobby and Josue, you know, about them being left alone. What is wrong with this country? And Japan would be like, "Yeah, fucking leave them alone."
Yeah,
like,
very much leave them alone. What about episode 3? Like a standout moment?
I mean, the spicy food was really funny to me, but the death cafe scene and the suicide bridge scene, I thought were really, really impactful. It really kind of stayed with you afterwards. And just as a whole, I think I've made it pretty clear. I found Robbie's parents to be simply adorable. I thought Matt, though, as a guest, as a person along on the journey, and I think that's an interesting thing. We don't really, well, that's not true. Robbie goes out of his way, I think, to tell us why he has chosen this specific person to come with him. Abdullah, he does it because he's a Muslim. He's a friend. He's a Muslim. He's very strong experiences about being an immigrant in the United States, obviously his wife for parenting in Japan, his parents for retirement, and Matt, because even to Robbie, who sees himself as a workaholic and as like a badge of honor, calls himself a workaholic, Matt is like nth degree even higher than that. I mean, I think he says at one point where he worked 15 hours a day for 2 years straight of launching Omaze.
Took a half day on Christmas.
Right, which him and Robbie like did something like they ended up working or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So he was a very good poster child for that conversation. He really exemplified and clearly for his job is a great speaker and very comfortable speaking from a personal way. And I think he really opened up here. It brought me really into the episode. But those particular scenes I found really affecting.
I agree with you. I definitely thought, I mean, for me, the reading out of Matt in particular's letter, oh, you guys, the tears you will shed. Yeah. That was extreme.
And you don't know him. You don't know the people he's talking
about.
No,
it didn't even matter.
It didn't matter.
It was so universal.
The words were so universal in the people you leave behind.
Yeah.
Right.
And even more specifically, too, to that, the idea that for them both being self-proclaimed workaholics, neither of them mentioned work once in their letters. There's that cliche of, you know, on your deathbed, you'll never say, "I wish I spent another hour at work." Like, no one says that. But it was amazing that this was not their deathbed. Like, they actually get to leave the death cafe and use that knowledge and really take it with them. Very poignant. I mean, especially I think in this COVID times when a lot of people are sort of doing that, like, how can I like take a break from work to help my children? You know, how can I help them with their schoolwork and stuff? I think there is a moment where you might say, like, you know what? You know, if there's anything I can do to not have to attend this meeting, you know, maybe I can just get an email about it or something. I honestly think that this would change some ideas.
Yeah, I agree. I if you remotely feel like you're missing out on your time at home with your kids or your spouse, your parents, your loved ones, just life, I think this episode is going to, you know, leave a mark on you. What about the immigration discussion in Denmark? What stuck with you from that episode, if any?
Again, I really felt like the government intrusion and the willingness to focus on one group of people and make
really
a law. Yeah, make a law.
Right.
That
there were
targeted...
no yarmulke laws.
Right. And like things like, you know, everyone has to shake hands, including women, despite the fact that that's against their religion. I mean, wow.
They mandate pork in the school lunches.
Yeah. So that, you know, those children who...
Assimilation is the key, right? They're forcing it is, assimilation.
And I really do understand. I really do get
well,
that's it.
Not that I'm defending. I'm not defending no, it or, I, or either course. Way. I'm their stated reason is they enforce the handshaking. They're enforcing at a young age the school lunches having meat that are not necessarily halal at all, and certainly outright banned, and not just by Islam. I mean, Orthodox Jews, you know, don't eat pork. A lot of people who are not religious don't eat pork because it's meat. And,
right.
you know, so the idea that it's like a forced kind of food
that,
is
that
very,
feels so intrusive.
Very un-American, no matter what your point is. No matter where your social stance is, the idea that the government is telling you to do this or not to do that is very odd, I think, to Americans.
Well, I mean, I think we always push back, right? I mean, there's definitely government rules. I mean, we're certainly not like some sort of like free state right. here in America. But at the same time, those were crossing so many lines for me that I was like, wow. I mean, it gave me a true, especially during this political time when I think there's this like complete attitude of like, oh, we're being oppressed. Oh, there's too much like pushing on us by the government. Go check out Denmark, y'all. You're going to have a better appreciation for what people go through and how, you know, how many more freedoms you really do have and that no one's trying to step on your toes. I thought that was really intriguing.
I think it's interesting to think about the fact that of all the conversations covered by Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness, this is the one that would be most difficult, nay, impossible to have in America. You would never be able to have the conversation that Ravi and Abdullah have with the Syrian politician.
Yeah.
You could not have that conversation, that civilized conversation. And that's my takeaway from it. There's a great scene between Ravi and Abdullah on the boat that I really enjoyed and I thought was a really interesting discussion. But the conversation that the two of them have with this politician who is Syrian but also very anti-refugee was super interesting because at the end of it, they're both like, you know, that bitch is crazy, but also I really liked him. He was very personable. They say, they're like, he was a really nice guy. If not for his beliefs that they find abhorrent,
right?
They'd really like him. Right. It was just this interesting that the idea that you could have a falafel sandwich, I think that's what they're eating, some kind of, or it was a halal meat or like hot dogs, right? Sandwich and have this conversation on a really difficult subject. It's just
on a park bench.
Yeah.
Just
and
being chill.
It didn't come to fisticuffs. No. And it's not like Abdullah didn't have, and Ravi didn't have really passionate beliefs, but they had a really respectful conversation. And this guy also, you know, he wasn't like filthy, dirty. He didn't use any pejoratives. He just has his very stated beliefs.
Right.
He wasn't disrespectful about it. It is. It's just a conversation. And I think the only way we move forward as a people is by having those kinds of conversations. If anything, I hope that kind of show is a lesson to us that civilized conversation is possible.
Yeah, I really do. I believe that. And especially I would say the idea that the politician actually said what he thought, seemingly without regard for like re-election or anything
enough.
Like that. Right. Like this was his belief. And he had it tattooed on his arm. Like, I mean, he had beliefs that were really strong and it was okay.
Well, I think it helps that at least in the current population.
Right. 92% agree.
92%. You know, I think re-election wise, I don't think he's
true.
In. I don't
good
think
call.
He's in, yeah. But he wasn't concerned. He wasn't concerned about making the American actors like him.
Or convince them.
It
was just like, this is the way I am.
Yeah.
This is how I do.
Right. He wasn't like, take this message back to your people or.
No.
You know, it was.
And you're wrong.
It wasn't.
It was just like, I don't care what you say.
Right.
Or I shouldn't say it like that. It was more like, this is what I think. This is what I'm acting on because this is what I firmly believe.
And
the end.
Further, this is what our country believes.
Yeah. Although there was debate on that. When you talk to individual people, they would say,
sure.
I don't know about that. Like they would talk about, you know, I'm
That's
not so
true.
Sure. You know, another favorite moment was when they were asking the one Danish man at the very beginning about how Danes, supposedly, there was a study that said that they're like the happiest country in the world.
Yeah. He said, he's like, I think, did he call it bullshit or he said they made it up?
I think it was like nonsense. Yeah, it was like, so it was some sort of nonsense poll. Like, it was basically like, that's not real. We have as many troubles as everyone else.
I think that that's an important episode that I think everyone should watch just for, because I think it's a timely discussion in America. But if nothing else, because it really presents two sides of an argument, which you don't get in the other episodes. The other episodes really present this one extreme
point. Or they're like a vignette. Like, this is what's happening here.
Right. Again, and because they're personal life questions, this is a society question. So it was a really interesting tonal shift. At the end of the day, do you love it? Do you leave it? Are you going to recommend it to your friends to watch?
I am going to actually recommend it to my friends to watch because I think that in this time of our lives, everything that everybody's going through, I think that it's okay to take a moment and actually have some mindful question asking of how you're doing things and if you want to continue doing them the same way. I have had a lot of friends say, you know, XYZ about my life has changed. And actually when things get going again, I don't know that I'm going to do it the same way again. I don't know that I'm going to sign up for the same things or I'm going to commit myself in the same ways or I'm going to run my house the same way I did before. I might actually change things and do things in a different way.
Because our priorities are different, the idea of what is important is different now.
Yeah, and they were forced to change their POV and like do things in a different way. And once they did it that way, they were like, hang on a minute. Kind of like each of these episodes. Once Ravi was in those situations, he was like, hang on a second. Maybe this is worth reexamining. And so I think the idea of purposeful self-discovery, you know, having this time to really have some introspection and think about like, what do I want? What are my priorities? And how do I want to do this? Not just have a kid, but how to have a kid and exactly how to raise them. I think they're really important questions. It also, it went by super quick.
They
I will
were very
say fun. That.
Yeah. I mean, for our long episode, I mean, more 40, the 50 minute episodes, it did go really quickly. And I think it had a lot to do with the presentation. And at the end of the day, I think I love this also. I think I would definitely recommend it to anyone. Again, because I think there's universality to a lot of the discussion and conversation, especially in America in 2020. I think if you're going to have these conversations, if you're going to watch something that's going to spark these conversations, Ravi Patel is a good person. He's a good medicine to make it go down easy, right? He's a good spoonful of sugar to have the conversations with because he's not confrontational. He's not shoving his beliefs in your face or in any of the people's faces that he's talking to, nor is he taking really aside. And maybe that's the upside to at the end of the episode, you're not really sure where he comes down. You don't know what his parents are going to do. You don't know what him and his wife are going to do parenting wise. You don't know if he's actually going to work less now after seeing South Korea or if his views changed on immigration after being in Denmark. But you get the idea that the conversation is started, that he is a conduit to allowing us to have these conversations amongst ourselves. And I think you and I, maybe not on every single thing, but I think after watching these, I think you and I actually did have some conversations about work life and especially work life and parenting. It started a conversation amongst ourselves that maybe we wouldn't have had if not for watching this. So I think there's a real utility here, especially in this weird ass time where everything, like you said, is you're taking a different look at it and a different lens of it. This is a great way to get yourself into the conversation. It'd be interesting to see if he does more of these because there's a lot of life questions out there. It's an interesting theory for an ongoing series periodically to kind of revisit. I would definitely, you know, go back with him and his cast of characters. So
highly recommend that you guys examine and re-examine the questions being asked here and definitely check out Ravi Patel's Pursuit of Happiness.
Available for streaming on HBO Max beginning on August 27th. Check it out.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.